Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, joined by the boss, John Roerink, Mike Malott, Jacob Kanzler, and our special guest this week, Representative Steve Johnson from Wayland Township. Thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Oh, thanks for having me here.
Wayland or Wayland Township? Let's start there.
Well, so I grew up in Wayland Township, but I've recently moved to Wayland City now, so now I live in Wayland.
But you've always been in the greater Wayland metropolitan area.
Yes.
And being a Byron Center guy, I can say that with a little tongue-in-cheek here.
Well, I went to South Christian High School, so we often, our football games were played at Byron Center's football field.
And you probably know the Wendy's right down 68th Street from South Christian High School.
Went there all the time.
That was my first job out of high school.
That was your first job?
Yeah, I was a Wendy's guy.
My first job was a Wendy's.
Was it really? Yeah. Where was your Wendy's?
West Saginaw. Yeah. I was the dining room clearing guy for a long time.
Gee whiz. We've worked together now 16 years and we just figured this out. The things you learn here on the MERS Monday podcast. Well, thanks for making the trek up here today. I appreciate it.
Oh, no. Thanks for having me here.
So you've been in Lansing now for a year and change or so forth.
15 months.
Let's kind of set the groundwork here a little bit. When you ran for office, what was kind of your philosophy? What were you telling folks that they were going to get if they elected Steve Johnson as a state rep?
So my overall philosophy was always less government, more freedom. It just seemed to me that government was growing and growing in every sector out there. Taxes were generally going up, spending was going up, more regulation. And so my philosophy is, you know what, we don't need more laws. We don't need more legislation. We need to shrink the role that government has in our lives. And so that's what I ran on, less government and more freedom in your individual lives.
Is it similar to Justin Amash, who's just north of you?
Yeah, well, he actually represents part of my district. I consider him a political mentor of mine. So I would say our philosophy is very similar.
And so what did you find when you got here? Did you feel like this was kind of an accepting attitude, or did you kind of feel a little bit on an island?
You know, it depends the issue. Sometimes you're on an island, sometimes people are with you. It just seems, in general, people in Lansing tend to think that government can solve problems. And it's understandable. When you see a problem, you think, oh, we have to do something about it. And since we are in government, we assume that means there must be legislation be passed. And so that's kind of one of my pushback is, well, maybe we don't actually have to do something. Maybe we should actually step back and let the free market kind of take care of itself.
How do you get away from that? How do you get away from that concept that government can solve everything and state government is here to the rescue?
Well, if I had the answer to that, then I wouldn't have to be here. Right. So I think that's going to be a constant battle. I think that's going to be sort of, you need the people to kind of, you know, consistently send people to Lansing that have that philosophy and that they have to pressure their representatives of, hey, we don't need more government growth because left unchecked, government will continue to grow.
Why is it that we've got like Justin Amash and Dave Ajima and Steve Johnson all kind of in that same area?
A bunch of liberty-loving people out there, I guess.
Okay. All right. What do you kind of see happening here with the legislature? Do you kind of see more of a push in that direction, or do you see in 2018 the political winds blowing in a different direction? How do you reconcile those?
I think 2018 is very up in the air right now because it is an election year. We don't know where things are going to go. It doesn't look like Democrats are getting kind of a surge. So what do we do beforehand? Do we do anything? Do we just continue on the path that we've been doing? Are we going to wait till lame duck? I don't know. I think there's a lot of us kind of wondering, what do the next few months hold for us? As far as a single issue going forward, that's going to be pretty big. I would assume prevailing wage will be that one. You know, they're still looking at the signatures. But from what I've heard, they're getting pretty close to having that. And so for me, I think that's good legislation. It will save taxpayers money. And really, the biggest beneficiary to that will be our schools. Save money on school construction costs. And I think there is support in the legislature for it. It'll be a tough vote, but I think we can get that one done.
Tell me about the enthusiasm among the folks that you represent. Do you still sense the same level of political enthusiasm that you did, let's say, in the presidential election year or even before that during the Tea Party movement?
Well, I think there's more of a frustration now than an enthusiasm. You see Republicans that have the state House, Senate, governors, Michigan Supreme Court, and at the federal level, we have the U.S. House, U.S. Senate, the president there. And we're not seeing a whole lot. We've got a good Supreme Court nomination there. We got some tax reform at the federal level. But here at the state level, we failed to do a large tax cut. We failed to do auto insurance reforms. So I think a lot of the base is getting frustrated. They put us here. They put us in a position where we could do substantial conservative changes, and yet we're not getting it done. and you put yourselves in their shoes, well, why should they be out knocking doors for us? Why should they be out campaigning for us if we're not actually showing them results?
Why is that? Why do you think that you're having trouble on those issues?
I think with just at the state level, you know, we've had the majority in the governorship now going on 8 years. It's been a while. I think we got some of the low-hanging fruit. You know, we did repeal of the Michigan business tax. They did right to work. Some of the more basic things that could be done. And I think we are growing complacent now. And now it's more of a managing instead of making big changes.
But, I mean, when you've made as many changes as you've had, I mean, there's only so far you can go, I guess. But we've gotten to the point now where the stuff that you want to get done has gotten really hard to get done.
Right.
Like.
We got the easy stuff done. You know, I still think we can do some tax cuts. I think auto no-fault reform is probably the top issue left. That and then unfunded liabilities. Because when you're looking at a state that's paying double the national average, clearly we have to do something on that. And you're not seeing, and you know, any sort of substantial legislation get done.
Does the unlimited lifetime benefit have to be eliminated to properly reform no fault?
In my opinion, yes. I think, for me, my biggest question has always been, why is it when I buy auto insurance, I'm also buying health insurance? And does it have to be eliminated? Well, I would say the mandatory part does. Now, if I choose to, if an insurance company wants to offer that option, which they probably would, and I voluntarily choose to purchase that, I should be able to do that. But why should I be forced to buy an extravagant health insurance policy when I buy auto insurance? To me, I have health insurance. You know, most people, they have health insurance. Why don't we let your health insurance cover those? And if you choose, because look, if you get an accident in Michigan, you're going to have the best coverage. Absolutely. No one is going to dispute that. But is it worth the price? And you're seeing people pay a tremendous amount. When I moved back here, when I got out of the Air Force, moved from Montana back here, my rates nearly tripled. Am I getting that much better insurance? It's better than it was. I don't think it's worth three times as much.
Well, you've probably got about a tenth of the drivers out there in Montana, don't you? It's just you and 90 miles an hour and a couple elk, isn't it?
Well, hey, those elk can be dangerous, though.
Representative, going back on what you said on the political frustration with people back home, is it so much so that this is a concern for Republicans trying to keep their seats in 2018?
Oh, I think absolutely. So everyone knows that there is going to probably be, it looks to be a better year for Democrats than Republicans. That being said, I don't think there is a large group of people that voted for Trump that are all of a sudden changing their minds and saying, oh, I think we should have voted, you know, Democrat. I think most people that voted for Trump, they knew what they were getting. What you're seeing is you're seeing an enthusiasm on the left that wasn't there before. You know, hey, I'm fine. If we're doing good policy and that's getting the left all fired up, well, hey, as long as we're doing good policy, I'm fine with that. We just need to be able to match that enthusiasm with our own side. And that's what we're not seeing. The left is energized and the right is going, well, what have you done for us lately? Nothing. So why should we have any enthusiasm? So I don't necessarily see a lot of independents flipping back and forth. It's just, are we going to get people out? And midterms is all about turnout. In order to get turnout, we have to be doing good public policy to do the conservative changes that we said we were going to do and the voters elected us to do. They expect us to do that.
Representative, I got to ask you a question that I wanted to ask ever since I wrote your bio for our webpage. The first time you ever did maintenance on a nuclear ICBM, how nervous were you? Because, you know, every once in a while I'll do an electrical repair in my house, and every time I touch a circuit, I sweat, even if the power shut off to the entire house. And I've often wondered, man, doing maintenance on a nuclear weapon, I think I would. I don't think I could do it. I think I'd be too shaky.
Well, we have a lot of training. So we went, after basic training, you go to California. We did about 6 months training there. And then when you get to your first base, you go through team training as well. So I think altogether, you probably got 15 months of training on there. Was I nervous? You know, I don't think when I first started running the field, because it's pretty simple. I mean, you're just turning a wrench. It's not as cool as it sounds. I was nervous when I became a team chief, where I was responsible for the entire team working on it. You know, then you get a little more nervous because anyone that screws up, it all falls on you. So I guess that was more my concern, is when you have that amount of responsibility. But there are so many safeguards in place on those missiles. They're incredibly safe. Good people that are working out there right now. And yeah, one of a great life experience for sure.
How cool is that, though? I mean, to know that you've got one of these things under your oversight. Yeah, and that's a lot of power, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I think I was 21 at the time. You know, when you're working out there, it's just you're going to the office, right? Doesn't, you know, hey, you got a nuclear missile right next to you. You don't think twice about it. Looking back on it, it's going, wow, that was actually pretty cool. Only a handful of people ever have that.
One more thing I wanted to ask you on the political end of things. Donald Trump, how popular is he in your House district?
You know, I think with the people that supported him before, I think they're still there. And the people that hated him before probably still hate him. You know, I think with Donald Trump, the main thing is most people go, man, I wish he wouldn't go on Twitter and say the things he does. But when you look at what he did, all right, we got Gorsuch in the Supreme Court. We got tax reform, moved the Capitol to Jerusalem. You're seeing a lot of regulations go away. You're seeing a lot of administrative things done that I think conservatives are very happy with. Now, maybe they're not happy with his tone of voice, you know, the way that he conducts himself. West Michigan is a very conservative area. He doesn't match our values in that sense. But the actual policy changes we're seeing, I think a lot of people are appreciative of those.
So if you're a candidate in West Michigan, do you want Donald Trump to come and endorse you? Is that a positive?
I don't think anyone's going to fight against it, but I think at the end of the day, everyone needs to make their race their own race. You know, you're not running for president. You're not running, especially if you're running for state house. You know, you're not running to go to Washington, D.C. Talk about the issues that matter to people at the state level. You know, I would argue auto no-fault reform would be the big one there. So just talk about the issues that affect the people of that district. You know, don't get down on all these, the federal issues going down, the news cycle at the federal level. You know, most people are kind of sick of the news over there. Keep it to the basics. Keep it at the state level. Make your own race.
So one of the things that we did last week is, first of all, one of us joined the NRA last week, which was very exciting. And it wasn't me. And in doing so, we got to take a look at the endorsements of the NRA over the last several cycles. And what we found, Mike, was there's quite a few folks who are endorsed by the NRA.
Oh, well, yeah. And the handout letter grades, A through F, and a number of, I think we had a bare majority that had A grades, and almost as many had the actually got the NRA endorsement. There were a couple that didn't because the opponent got the same grade in the Senate. It was even more stark. What was the number, 27?
Yeah, and then a super majority got a passing grade. What does that say about this legislature representative that we've had so many folks who are A-OK in the eyes of the NRA?
Well, I think, you know, a lot of people, you watch the media right now, the NRA is taking a lot of hits and everyone seems to think that they're, you know, that they're the worst people out there. Look, they're not. They're just an organization of gun owners across America that support their Second Amendment rights. As you can see, a large number of people actually pass through the NRA's grading process. They're not this far right-wing group. They're actually just normal, common-sense, everyday Americans pushing to keep our Second Amendment rights secure.
And they do a lot of gun safety training, by the way, too, which gets lost a little bit, I think, when we're caught in the middle of the discussion about gun control and background checks and where is the NRA coming down. They do a lot of good safety training and spend a lot of money and resources and time on that.
Gun owners want gun owners to be safe. I mean, a bad gun owner makes all of us look bad. So the last thing we want to do is discourage training. We actually want people to get trained. We want more people to be able to handle their guns better. Because every time you see a story in the news of, you know, a bad guy with a gun, it makes us all look bad. So no, the NRA does a lot of good work there. And I think we were talking about this earlier. You know, a lot of people talk about getting money from the NRA. I never got money from the NRA, and most people don't ever get money from the NRA at the state level. Really, at the end of the day, it's mostly, and a lot of people covet their endorsement because it's a lot of responsible gun owners in their district that want to keep their Second Amendment rights protected.
Has the NRA endorsement become a litmus test for Republican candidates?
I don't know if it's become a litmus test. I think when voters are looking to see who is going to stand up for their constitutional rights, you know, an easy way for them when it comes to the Second Amendment is to look at the NRA. You know, voters don't, we have a limited amount of time. We have to rely on other people for other things. So you might look to the NRA to see, hey, is this guy good on gun issues? You might look to Michigan Family Forum to see if they're good on social issues. And so as you look to different organizations, see where they're falling down with endorsements, a lot of people look to the NRA. A lot of Second Amendment rights supporters look to the NRA and say, hey, where does this candidate stand? For myself, I know that I'm a strong Second Amendment defender, and I know a lot of people in my district are strong supporters of the Second Amendment. And so I certainly want to make sure that they know that, and a good way for me to demonstrate that is to have the endorsement of the NRA. Now, that doesn't mean I'm ever going to violate my principles and vote differently on a bill just to get their endorsement, but I'm going to make sure that they know that I am a strong supporter of the Second Amendment and will continue to vote that way.
Jack earlier was talking to us about the grades, a B and a C, and his point was if you get a B, you might as well just get an F, because if you don't get an A, it's no point in even advertising what grade you got. Would you concur with that?
Right, getting a B is no good, right? I mean, you send that out, you're not going to put that on a mailer, because then the anti-NRA people say, oh, that's too high, and then the pro-NRA people say that's too low, and you'll get no votes. So, look, yeah, you're not going to get people touting that. Most people are either going to tout an A grade or an F grade. But the fact that a lot of people have B and C grades, and I think a lot of them are Democrats, a lot of moderate, not even all of them are that moderate Democrats, it shows that, you know, maybe people aren't in lockstep with the NRA, but the NRA in general probably follows the views of a lot of people in this state and a lot of legislators.
So you balance what we have here with the political dynamics in the Capitol with kind of the national momentum to try and do something about school safety. Just this past weekend, we had a few thousand folks on the Capitol lawn again. I think that's the fourth rally we've had now on school safety. So how do you balance these things? How do you get something out of the legislature on the state level to show the folks, yes, we care, yes, we're going to do something about it, without ticking off the NRA or without violating that principle?
So when you look at the situation that happened in Florida, and that's what kind of prompted all this, right? And so I talked to state police, and I was like, hey, you know, if someone goes, if there's, I think it was 39 times that law enforcement went to this guy's house, multiple calls, the guy had made threats. I talked to state police, and they said, the current laws show we actually already could take away that guy's guns. You know, you'd have you'd have to go through court. I mean, through the proper due process channels, as long as someone has made a threat, they're a threat to society or to themselves, and it's credible, you can go through the court process and you can take away their weapons.
So you don't need a new red flag law, it sounds like.
No, I think even in Florida, they didn't even need it there. They just need to follow the current laws that were already in existence.
So what do we need to do? Is there anything that we need to do, or we just got to be more aware of the laws that we have on the books?
Well, I think there's that. But for me, I'm a data guy. I like looking at the numbers. Like, you know, what do the numbers say? And there's a good article. I wish I could remember the author. But he went through the data of safety in schools. Are they safe or not? And so looking at the number of deaths and injuries and where they occur, schools are actually one of the safest places that kids will spend their time. You know, they're there about half their waking hours, but yet they're far more likely to be injured or killed on the way there in a vehicle or at home in a medicine cabinet being poisoned. And so the school shootings certainly make the media. I mean, that's going to grab the headlines, and rightfully so. But I think that often gives us the perception that schools are maybe the most dangerous place for our kids, when the data doesn't show that. The data shows schools are actually already incredibly safe.
So the coalition last week came up with a proposal to, this was a coalition of the police chief organizations. They proposed putting an officer in every school. Is that something that you'd favor?
I'm not necessarily opposed to that. We have to look at what the cost would be.
You know, there's more than 3,000 schools in this state. That would be a big cost.
It's 120 million, wasn't it, the cost?
Yeah, I think it was 120.
I think that's low. I don't see how they do it for 120 million. I think it's at least double that.
Well, and usually with government, anytime you estimate a cost, it usually ends up being more than that, and over time it grows. But I've heard from multiple people that former law enforcement, former military, a lot of people that are retired, they are willing to go and volunteer their services. They're willing to volunteer and be as a school security guard voluntarily and to protect children. So I think we need to give schools the options, right? Give them more options on what they want to do that makes best sense for their school.
I just remember high school and middle school. I think for a lot of these guys that would sit there day in and day out, it would be a very boring job.
Yeah, you'd really have to engage in the kids. I mean, you'd have to do a little bit more than just kind of sit in a chair and watch people walk go by.
Just being there to be a sort of a law enforcement presence in a school would be, I would almost be tedious if you weren't teaching something or doing something.
Well, I think that's why the Sheriff's Association is talking about school resource officers, because I think in theory these resource officers are doing more than sitting in a chair and watching folks go back and forth. I think they're engaged in the school a lot more and connecting with the kids and doing activities and maybe even doing a little more on the counseling front and just kind of getting to know kids and hanging out with them and seeing where the trouble spots are. I think there's a little bit more involved in that. Another thing I want to touch on here before we sign off here, we saw some significant movement in the Republican side on the governor's race with Bill Schuette coming out with a pro-Schuette ad and a negative Cali ad, and then the the governor coming out with his relentless positive action pack, and then he's got an ad to go on top of the Brian Kelly ad. A lot of movement, guys, and I wanted to get your thoughts here on, is this a lot of spending already for late March? I'll start with you, John.
No, not necessarily. You know, and we were talking about a little bit earlier about why should he be going negative so early, and I think there's numeric and polling based reasons for doing that. Every time he seems to bring up the Trump unendorsement of his opponent, Lieutenant Governor Brian Kelly, it actually impacts the numbers. Some MERS polling that we did with Target Insight showed the same thing, significant drop among Republican primary voters who hear about the fact that the Lieutenant Governor kind of disengaged from his endorsement of Trump prior to the general election in 16. It does have an impact, so I think that's why you're kind of seeing this heavy-hitting ad war already.
Well, and I think the Cali forces and maybe some of the Democrats as well were saying that, shoot, he's pushing the panic button. If he's so not worried about Brian Kelly, why is he acting like he's so worried in it? And it seems like to me that, if you excuse the phrase, he's trying to drown the baby in the bathtub, right? I mean, he doesn't want to see Brian Kelly take off in any way. And why save your negatives when he's getting close, when you can try and frame him as he's just kind of getting into flight? I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, Steve.
Yeah, well, I know you guys want to talk about the Republican gubernatorial race, but, you know, I think you look at the Democrat side where the Democrats want Gretchen Whitmer. They've been trying to get this race over with, but Stree has thrown in a wrench in all their plans. I think the Democrat establishment still thinks that they're going to run this show. But if you look at, I think you see a lot of similarities between the Hillary Clinton and the Bernie Sanders campaign, and everyone thought Hillary was going to win, and at the end of the day, Bernie won. So I think that's the bigger news story, is someone who the Democrats don't want to win, and they are actively trying to push him out. I think he's still going to be around in August, and we'll see.
Well, you maybe not don't remember this, but you remember when the Democrats were all coalesced around Larry Owen, and when he was running for governor for the primary, everybody assumed, I mean, he went around the state in the spring, basically kind of self-coronating himself, acting like he was going to be the nominee of the Democratic Party. I remember covering primary night, his victory party in Detroit. They had an electrical outage in the hotel at 11 o'clock. Everything went dark. Lights went back on an hour later, and guess what? He lost to Jeffrey Figer when the results from the city of Detroit came in. So, I mean, it can happen. It's happened before.
Well, and you have to see where the enthusiasm is, too. And I think that's where Gretchen Whitmer hopes that she's got a little more of an advantage than Larry Owen, that the national wave and the national enthusiasm is behind a candidate like her. You're seeing a lot more women getting involved in politics, and I think that that's partly what is driving the momentum behind her right now, and why the labor unions have signed on, and why you're seeing Duggan and the congressional folks get on, is that she's kind of waving, she's riding the wave of what seems to be the hot thing right now, and that is more women getting involved in politics and pushing back against Trump. Okay, one more thing I wanted to touch on before we close out, guys. Dennis Lex had an interesting tweet that I wanted to talk about, because it talks about running mates, and whether it's Bill Schuette or whether it's Brian Kelly as your gubernatorial candidate, I think it still applies. He said he received a robocall in which three names were floated by him as potential running mates. He had Candace Miller, Terry Lynn Land, and Laura Cox, basically trying to take the temperature of the room and which one is the best. First of all, I want to talk about who wasn't on there. Tanya Shoemaker wasn't on there. What should we read into that? She doesn't want to be lieutenant governor. I think that's pretty clear, right? I mean, it's either AG or nothing.
That's the way I would take it. I mean, I think she's kind of indicated that in the past before.
Okay, so of those three names that are on the list, what makes the most sense? If you're a Republican, you would probably want Candace Miller all day, right? I mean, if you can get Candace Miller on your ticket, that is the best case scenario. Is anybody going to disagree with that?
I think politically that makes the most sense. I think the next person, if I were certainly Brian Kelly, I would pick probably Laura Cox, just because you get a little bit more of a regional balance on the ticket if you're Brian Kelly.
And here's the reason why I say Candace Miller, because she has a free run. She doesn't have to run again in 2018. Laura Cox, there's a decision that has to be made. You either let her run for Senate or you put her on the ticket, and then all of a sudden does that 7th state Senate district become a competitive district? Is that one now you have to worry about? Because if Laura Cox is the nominee, I think you can make the argument that it's a lot safer of a seat than if let's say, John Pastor, and nothing against John Pastor, I like John Pastor, but does that now become a competitive seat because he's going to, let's say, he's your nominee, or maybe Laura Toy comes back? I mean, I think there's this thought that if Laura Cox is the nominee, that it's a lot safer of a seat. So do you take that off the playing field? And then you got Terry Land, who is still active. And Jacob, you just saw Terry Land, didn't you?
Yeah, she appeared at the endorsements events where Callie was endorsed by Snyder, and she was right up there on stage, right next to the two main men. So
interesting, she ran for lieutenant governor before. Didn't do all that well. Her U.S. Senate race didn't do great either. I think she's probably better suited for Republican Party chair when Ron Weiser's done. I hear this is a one-time gig for him to be Republican Party chair. And then if Callie, particularly if Callie gets in, it would seem like she would be a better fit for Republican Party chair. She's well known within the Republican Party establishment. She's good at raising money. Folks know her. They like her. I think that she's more in her comfort area in that realm. But we'll see what happens. I mean, she's an old John Yob client. So, you know, you got Brian Callie, John Yob, you know, Terry Land. You know, I mean, there's that connection, too, that she may be a little too West Michigan. And I think John's right. I think you need more of a regional balance. And I think Candace Miller would add a little spark on that, particularly talking about infrastructure issues, having to deal with what she's had to deal with in Macomb County. I think she'd be a good fit if you could recruit her. But some could argue that, if you wanted to run statewide, why didn't you just run for governor? And she might be the front runner if she were the governor, a gubernatorial candidate. But that's a different discussion for a different day, I suppose. I appreciate Representative Steve Johnson coming in today. Jacob, John, and Mike, as we're huddled upstairs, as the MERS World Headquarters technical crew is down there warming up our newsroom. For some reason, all the heat's up here. It's higher rises. Thanks for listening.
Couldn't have anything to do with podcast broadcasting being done upstairs.
All the hot air's up here?
Yeah, exactly.
Also, special thanks to AT&T for sponsoring this and all our other podcasts. Until next week, I'm Kyle Maloney. Take care.